Got it. Here we go. All right. It is Friday. That means no Tom. Geez, I wonder if Sherry was doing the entire time Tom was back. Hey, welcome back. Again, I don't think it's an even exchange, chicken for lamb, but no. That's what we're serving today. All right, diving in today! All right, Tom comes back. I guess 3 days in a row is just way too much for the old man. So he is out today. Lots and lots of news to get to. I wrote to Jacob and I asked about we're going to do anything on September 11th. And he said, yeah, you know what? Let's get Felix in here. Normally, I would play Felix's crazy song to get him in here. But I think this particular story and the way he covers it, just to bring him on. Felix, how are you?
Hey, John. What's going on?
Good to have you. I know that you, a big radiophile that you are, you love history, and you love to combine the stories of radio and history together. So you were sort of pouring through the sounds of Cairo Radio on this day 20 years ago.
Yeah, because I wasn't working for Cairo 20 years ago. I did work there 30 years ago, but 20 years ago I was just a lowly museum guy.
Yes.
And so when I saw the towers, it took me a couple hours to start rolling tape. I got out my old boombox and pressed record, and got a bunch of stuff from Cairo and have just some samples from it because, you know, this is before there was social media, before there was YouTube.
Yeah.
There wasn't any, you didn't tell Alexa to play Cairo Radio. You had to tune in the radio and play it. It was on AM. And it was the best way to know what was going on locally and internationally and nationally. So, I mean, for instance, I think the best thing that radio does in times of crisis is just tells you what's going on, just the objective facts. I've got Heather Bosch, who's still with us 20 years later. This is Heather talking about a press conference with Mayor Paul Schell.
Mayor Paul Schell says he's been in contact with military leaders, and Schell says there will be a Navy ship stationed in Elliott Bay. He wouldn't give any more details where the ship comes from or what kind it will be. He said, don't be alarmed, though. If you see that military ship out in Elliott Bay, that's where it will be stationed, as he says, a precaution. Also, we can tell you now that the Urban Search and Rescue Team based here in the Puget Sound region will be leaving around 5 p.m. from McCord Air Force Base to New York to do what this team does probably better than anybody else in the world, which is to search for people in collapsed buildings and other difficult situations. So they'll be taking off around 5. The mayor then added that he wants everyone to pray for the president and members of Congress, who he says, quote, will be making some very difficult decisions in the coming days. He then added that he wants us all to pray for the victims of this terrorist attack. Live in downtown Seattle, Heather Bosch, News Radio 710 Cairo.
I don't know about you, but you know, you can look at a picture of something or a film of something and it has one effect on your memory. If I hear the sound of it, it takes me right back there. It goes right into my brain without getting my eyes in the way. And that's like, it's so easy to remember just hearing these kinds of reports. Totally factual, just localized for what's going on here and, you know, in this zip code, but obviously tied into what had happened in New York and the Pentagon in Pennsylvania earlier that morning.
You know what strikes me on that is that so Mayor Paul Schell, a Democrat, asking for people to pray for a Republican president.
Hey, that's a nonpartisan office, John. Watch it, okay? Why do you got to politicize all these political
offices? No. I just think it's interesting. I mean, now,
I know.
Often when nowadays, your prayers are doing little, thoughts and prayers aren't enough. I mean, even the people mock prayer. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No, we were very much united, at least in the first couple hours after 9/11. And the other thing that radio does, along with getting information, is the analysis on the fly as to what's going on. And We knew absolutely nothing about what had happened and what was going to happen. Dory on his show that day, sometime between noon and 3, he talked a little bit about the emotional response to the news.
I think a lot of people today would say, and this is emotion that is talking today, and hopefully whatever the American response is will be a reasoned one. But I think right now the emotion of the moment has Americans saying that we must strike back 100 times stronger than the force with which we were struck. Because that is the only way to stop terrorism. Now, again, that's an emotional response. What is the most practical response? That will be evaluated. But there will be a response. You can be sure of that.
He was right about that last part. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Now, fast forwarding a little bit, I also spent some time this summer talking to former elected officials about what it was like to be in office on 9/11 20 years ago tomorrow. And I talked to, she wasn't governor at the time, she was attorney general, but I talked to Chris Gregoire about how she experienced that morning almost 20 years ago.
course, I went into work immediately and began to ask the question, did they start on the East Coast? Are they coming to the West Coast? Knowing that we have some vulnerabilities here and some significance, particularly, for example, with a Boeing plant, would there be further activity? Should we expect it? What was going to be shut down? What were citizens supposed to do? How should we respond to all of that? And I remember having, as I recall, a conversation with the governor. Is there anything that you need from us at the Attorney General's office, legal or otherwise? We stand ready to help you in anything you may need.
You know, and eyes were on all elected officials locally, though there wasn't really much that anybody could really do locally other than, you know, like Paul Schell talking about a Navy ship out in Elliott Bay. Sam Reed, though, who had been in office in Thurston County, and then he was Secretary of State 20 years ago, he talked about sort of what it felt like to be in the spotlight, knowing people were watching him.
This made me more aware, as did the Nisqually earthquake, that the staff and some of the public were looking at me to see if I would remain calm, if I would remain focused, if I wouldn't kind of, you know, panic a bit or something, and kind of reassuring them that, you know, everything's going to be okay. We're going to move forward. We need to focus on what we need to do.
Yeah, and another elected official who had this really extreme local focus, and, you know, nobody suffered personally in King County on 9/11 20 years ago, but Ron Sims, he told me that the first thing that morning he looked outside and there was the special county car was out there, the armored one, the one for really scary occasions, and they hustled him into that and drove him down to some place called The Rock. I guess that's the emergency response center. He couldn't get him to tell me where that is, but looking back 20 years on, he sort of had he saw some pretty positive things that came out of that day.
9/11 has its own universe, and you got to understand that nothing bad came out of it. So when you watch professional orchestration and talent applied to make sure that there's not a single citizen in this county, not in a daycare facility, not in a child care facility, not in a nursing home facility, not in a hospital, not at a school building, not at a grocery store. When you know that people made sure that no one was harmed, oh, wow, you walk out feeling really, really good.
And that's when, when everything works, that's great. You have people at the different levels that they're responsible for, you know, ensuring that their citizens are kept safe. Dipping back into the old audio again, Dave Ross was on from 9 to noon back in those days. And, you know, he's from the New York area, and he had a pretty personal response to it. And this is Dave making a prediction about what was going to be coming next.
This is the rogue attack we've been told so much about. And yet, from the experts we've heard and talked to this morning, how could you have prevented it? It didn't come via missile. It came via passenger jets in areas which are heavily traveled by passenger jets all the time. There will... somebody who grew up in the New York area and has visited New York City to see something like this, there's really nothing you can say except that you're upset, you're in shock, you're angry. I mean, I've got friends in New York. I don't know what's happened to them. They may have been working. I don't know. I've called my parents already. They were upstate, but there will be many, many other phone calls which will not be returned in the same fashion. And it is just beginning. This will go on for months. It will go on for years.
Yeah, and he was exactly right. So I was thinking, 20 years after Pearl Harbor in 1961, they didn't get the Pearl Harbor monument, the memorial installed, I think, until 1962, but... So much had changed in those 20 years since Pearl Harbor. We'd beaten the Japanese in World War II, vanquished the Germans, and, you know, had a whole new set of enemies in the Soviet Union who we were, you know, in the Cold War with the Bay of Pigs in 61, and the Cuban Missile Crisis a year after that. It's like,
yeah,
there's always some new thing that comes along, and, you know, 20 years on, this feels different because the war on terror isn't over. Afghanistan, we're out of there, but it didn't really end. And we're in the middle of this pandemic for which we don't know the ending of either. So it's sort of... It feels very open-ended to me to not really kind of know the final chapters of these two pretty big stories that we're still living through right now.
You feel, Sherry, the things that you just heard, you were in radio, you've been in radio for a long time. What you just heard as Cairo covered the news, For you, as you hear this, how do you respond to what Felix is sharing with us?
Well, I think you're right. It is different than it has been historically. I know for me, I was working in radio at the time, and remember, I live 5 miles from the Pentagon, so my experience was different than someone on the West Coast. The thing that struck me the most about that day, though, given that Washington D.C. was hit, the traffic patterns, I was a traffic reporter on television, and the traffic patterns in D.C. had to be rerouted, and there was just a tremendous amount of upheaval in terms of what people were doing and logistically people, you know, getting from one place to another. And on any given day, because it was one of the probably one of the worst traffic, you know, areas in the country. And any given day, you have dozens and dozens of accidents. That day, there wasn't a single accident during rush hour. People were completely kind to each other. They were patient. The backups were for hours getting around some of the barricades and the blocks that they had on roads. And there wasn't a road rage incident. There wasn't anything. So I get the sense of shock, the sense of a feeling as though, you know, where do we go from here? And it was so early that no one really knew who to blame or what to think of it. It was just, you know, just a tragic, tragic day.
Yeah. Wow. What a fascinating sort of take that. So people were kinder or slower or more patient or just, I guess it was just also a sense of utter shock that they were sort of proceeding home or going wherever they had to go, but they're more aware of everyone.
Yeah. They were more aware of everyone, and I think everyone was just so cautious. Everyone was afraid at that point. Everybody wanted to get back home. Remember how difficult it was to get, at that time, a cell service.
Oh,
you
yeah.
couldn't reach anybody because all the cells, it was all jammed. So people were trying to get home, and they wanted to know if everybody was okay. Even though you weren't in the line of fire that day necessarily, everybody wanted to make sure whoever they were going home to, they were okay, and whoever was on the road was going to get home. So it was just, I mean, I know it's a super nerdy observation in terms of it being traffic and all of that.
Right. We'd expect nothing less.
but coming from that perspective and doing it every day, not to have a single accident on an evening rush hour was, you know, was very significant. Yeah. It was, you know, it was a result of people being profoundly affected by it.
Yeah. And there was a sense of unity that persisted for, I don't know if it was a matter of days or weeks, but even, you know, I can't remember, who was the president of France who said, you know, we're all Americans now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, NATO invoking the Atlantic Treaty that, you know, once an attacking one NATO member is attacking everybody. There was a sense of like, we're in this together, probably unlike there had been since, you know, prior to probably World War II. But it was so just hard to process because it was so visual. I mean, it was such a, you know, in a sick way, it was an event that was designed for cable television.
Yeah.
And the internet was there, but you didn't have YouTube to share video clips and stuff. This was about wall-to-wall coverage on TV with those two towers, you know, burning the way they were, and then this collapse video being shown over and over again. It just was, there was no way, you couldn't escape it.
Yeah.
But it did create the sense of unity.
Felix, Cairo has put together, from people that work at Cairo Radio, on mynorthwest.com, I think it's there, they've asked a bunch of us that are on the air about where we were on that day, or our thoughts on that day and stuff like that. I don't think they talked to you about it, but I'd like to hear what you have to say, because later on around 5 o'clock, Sherry and I will share our stories. But for you, on September 11th, did you get a call from somebody to tell you to turn on the television, or... Do you remember your thoughts when first saw the first plane hit or the second plane hit?
I remember it so vividly. My father-in-law had passed away unexpectedly a week earlier on September 4th, which was my wife's first day back at work after maternity leave. So we'd been living a week of just hell prior. We were just totally aware of everything. And just, you know, my daughter, I think, was 3 months old at the time. And I was up with her early, and I turned on the radio and heard what was going on. And I was holding her in my arms, watching that first tower collapse on television. Never forget that. You wonder, sort of, Jesus, what kind of world have I brought a child into? But no, it was just, it was, you know, it was radio and TV, it was everything, and it was all about this very personal family event that happened a week earlier.
Yeah.
Mourning for my father-in-law was kind of wiped away. It's like his mourning period, not that it was official, it just ended with 9/11 because the scale and the scope and everything was so far beyond this single life that meant a lot to us, that it really truncated that period of mourning for him, which is kind of weird, I guess. But having a baby to take care of made every, I wanted to have like 10 babies at that point, because it just sort of felt like, here's the hope in this little child. And that's what we need more of. So it was sweet. Intense.
There's a piece in the Wall Street Journal. I can't remember if it was Peggy Noonan or who had written it, said that if the towers hadn't fallen, that it wouldn't be, if the planes had hit and all the tragedy that goes with it, but it was the towers coming down, these two massive buildings. And if you don't know New York, I mean, it is bigger than anything you can imagine here on the West Coast. He said if the buildings hadn't collapsed, or maybe it was Peggy Noonan said, that it wouldn't have the same impact that it has today. And it wouldn't have had the same impact that it had for the hours, days, and weeks and months that had followed afterwards. Do you think that's true?
Oh, I think absolutely. I remember like watching them before they fell. I remember thinking like, boy, how are they going to get all those people out of there? They're going to do helicopters. And then, you know, my dad was an engineer. So I was thinking like, God, what's the renovation project going to look like? Are they going to have to shut it down, rebuild it? It was a shock that it fell down. I didn't expect that at all. But I think she's absolutely right. That was the symbolic moment of just something that big and that tall could be wiped out with a couple of jetliners. Boy, then what else? What else is vulnerable?
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Felix. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, you guys.
Okay. There goes Felix. Tracy Taylor for us on a Friday. How are we looking out there? Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Keel Mortgage, the one to call. If you need a mortgage, you want anybody to refinance that house of yours, that would be great. You can give Keel Mortgage a call. Laura Keel, everybody there at Keel Mortgage, can't wait to hear from you. 1-888-778-KIEL. Wow. During the fascinating news by Aaron, I almost lost my life. And
what?
I thought, you know, would anybody come here to save me? How long would I rot? And would both my dogs eat me? That's the big question I had. Holy moly, was that scary. Sean, if you could have an explosion sound ready to go, would it really help with this story?
Oh, yeah. I got your text, so we could have done this off the air. Which we already did.
Sorry about that. Sometimes I mistype the word, and then you literally play the wrong sound effect. Like, I had asked for something one time.
Wipers, right? Or something?
Yes. I can't remember what. I wanted some. What did I want? And I mistyped it. I typed it too quickly. And then you played the sound of windshield wipers, and I needed whips or something like that.
Something like that. Something crazy.
And the sound came in. I'm like, what? This doesn't help. And you're like, you asked for wipers. I said, no, whips, not wipers. Yeah, that's what it was. So during the commercial break, I've lit a fire here in Cleellum. It's cold and it's rainy. So I have a fire going, and I accidentally left my lighter on top of the wood-burning stove. And then the little lighter just exploded and piece of plastic flew all over the place. Since you had the explosion. And then the one piece of the lighter hit a box of ammunition, which caused another explosion. Now, that I'm making up, but I'm standing off to the side of the thing. This giant thing of big flames just shot out. I was like, holy. And I thought, if that had killed me, how long would my body have been decomposing here until somebody cared?
We would have realized pretty quick, John. I don't know if you remember, but you have a radio show that we need you for from 3 to 7.
So. I know, but here's the question. Like, let's say it killed me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, and I'm laying here. Okay, now it's you texting. Hey, where are you? We need you. Hey, we're back on. And then Sean going, you've got a Keel Mortgage spot. And there I am on the ground lying there, and my dogs are eating me.
Well, they probably wouldn't eat you right away. Like, they would kind of sniff you a little bit, and then when they got hungry enough, they would eat you. It might take a day for them to eat you.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
You're pretty
If that
bony,
makes you feel
though.
Any better.
You're bony, though, right,
John? Right, but at that point, I think you're right. I think it's more than a day. I think they got to wait, like, 5 days, because I've heard of people that have diabetes, and the dogs eat their toes, and they don't know that's happened. And then an explosion goes off.
Yuck.
You know, all the gross stuff you say on the air, and then I slightly cross the line, and then I get this.
What gross stuff do I say? I don't say anything gross about diabetic toes. Yuck. And dogs eating diabetic toes.
Jacob, look that up. I swear I didn't dream that up. Look up man with diabetes doesn't realize dog ate toes off. Okay. San Francisco Public Schools, this is real news, has decided that what's the best way to be able to help kids. How old are these children, by the way?
These children are in first grade, but okay. 57,000 San Francisco children are being taught this.
Okay, hold on. Here we go.
San Francisco's Potrero Hill, it was a beautiful day at Webster Elementary School. Ms. Susie Brennan is teaching first grade students about mindfulness, a meditation style that focuses on slow and deliberate breathing. Everyone sat on the floor and listened to her calming voice.
When we're focusing on our breath, we can use it as an anchor. So if our mind starts to wander away, we can just gently bring it right back and notice our breathing.
The superintendent of schools, Dr. Vincent Matthews, was there and took deep breaths with the six-year-old.
By the way, this woman reading this sounds like she's from the 1950s, doesn't she? Alice Wirtz from KCBS?
In the social-emotional learning technique that focuses on the whole student.
And these lessons are being done throughout our district, not just at the elementary level, but at the middle school and at the high school level also, as I said, to make sure students know that they're welcomed and cared for.
Teachers and staff are also benefiting from this calming technique as well. Ms. Susie says,
it's an opportunity for them to sit with their class and also for them to notice sounds and their breath. It's a moment of pause for the teachers as well.
President Eisenhower is encouraging this type of behavior throughout the schools. Good Lordy. First of all, I don't know if anybody, I do the meditation on the Headspace app. It's hard. It is really hard. Really hard to learn how to meditate and even to do it well and you get anything out of it. Most people try it, they download an app, they do it for a couple of days, whatever, and it is just unbelievably difficult and you can't tell if you're really getting anything out of it. Really? 6-year-olds are going to sit there on the floor and be aware of their breath and then try to bring their minds back or their thoughts back to their breath. You ever tried it? It's, can you imagine teaching 6-year-olds how to meditate?
Yeah, I actually did transcendental meditation for a long time.
And here we go. This is going to be some gross story.
No, it was, and it's life changing, and it's really a pretty amazing thing if you can get into it. Of course,
Sherry
stopped.
Meditated so hard that a dog tried to eat her toes.
Eat her toes off, right? She didn't realize it.
I did it so hard, I got diabetes, and okay. So I really think it's a great thing. But I think the bigger thing is, imagine high schoolers. Like, do you really think they're going to sit there and not have a complete giggle fest or something if people are trying to get them to just concentrate on their breathing? You know, somebody's going to throw a spitball or something. Right. I mean, the first graders are probably more likely to pay attention than high schoolers will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by the way, that just goes to show your age. Throw a spitball. You think they're also going to dunk the girls' ponytails in an inkwell? Jeez, Sherry. Trying to appeal to people under the age of 80.
All right. So I don't know what.
I want to go back to this. You did transcendental meditation.
Yeah, for a long time. Yeah, I took the class. I did it every day, 15 minutes twice a day. In my old house in Baltimore, I had a meditation room. I had my own room just for that.
Wow.
Yeah,
didn't people
really
join cults and then drink Coca-Cola and sing songs with other people from other countries? That transcendental meditation stuff, didn't it sort of get a bad rap in the 70s?
Well, I think you're thinking of maybe Hare Krishna or something like that. But
I think you're one step away from that, being at the airport with a bad haircut.
Well, that's happened too, but not because of that.
Okay.
But yeah, TM really hasn't gotten too bad of a rap. I mean, I think people would always think anything that involves kind of an Eastern philosophy or something that seems unusual to be cultish, but it isn't. I mean, it's a real technique that people use with a mantra, and it does work. It's really pretty powerful if you can do it. But I stopped. I just stopped doing it. I got busy and I stopped doing it. And like you said, once you try again, it's really hard. Once you try, your brain just, you know, it just is so, get the monkey mind, you know, where you go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. So I keep saying I'm going to get back into it, but I never do it.
And why, and how has your life become less whatever now that you don't do it?
Well, the thing that you get from TM, I think, is that you have a sense of, and this is going to sound very corny, but you do have a sense of peace. You have this kind of relaxed way about things, because when you allow your mind to relax and you don't have the anxiety that goes with everyday, you know, worrisome thinking and the sort of the repetitive thoughts, you are able to handle things a little bit differently. And I think that I kind of miss that.
I see. So for a six-year-old, would they ever be able to achieve truly meditative states?
Well, I don't know if they'll be able to transcend, but I think that they probably, yeah, I mean, is it going to work? Probably not. But I mean, is it harmful? No, it's just, it's okay, I think. It's okay for them to do it. I just don't think they're necessarily going to be old enough to comprehend it. And I think the older kids are going to think it's hilarious and not want to do it.
I see. And you say transcendental. So what do you transcend by getting into that state?
Well, they say that the transcendental part is the space between your thoughts. So it's sort of, I agree.
No, I understand. It's that moment just before you take the next breath. That's the thing you're supposed to go towards.
Exactly. So when you transcend, you sort of get into that space, and it's just bliss. It's just amazing. Like, all your thoughts are gone. You're just there. It's hard to explain, and it does sound weird and all of that, but
I get it.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Would you be aware of whether or not a dog were eating your toes off?
Yeah, you probably would, and you would snap right out of it, and okay. And then it would ruin everything, and then you get mad at the dog and all of that. And
Jacob,
I would go notice if there was an explosion with a lighter near my house. I would notice that too.
I sent you the story. What's the headline?
It's actually really fascinating. It has to do with the fact that the dog did take the diabetic person's toes, but that it actually might have saved that person's life.
There we go.
So it's actually a happy ending.
Happy ending. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Happy. There we go.
With the loss of toes.
Right.
The dog ate three of them, by the way. Okay. Those of you enjoying an early dinner. All right, Tracy Terrell, look at traffic. All right, here we go. Tom and Curley Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well, 98973. Sherry in for Tom. Tom came back from France, and then Friday seems to be his day off. He's like Johnny Carson in the late 90s. All right. Okay. Now, I can't even pronounce this, but I know this bothers Sherry. Somebody that fidgets a lot suffers from, or is it that you can't stand somebody that fidgets? Oh, I see. So if somebody's a fidgeter and you really have a problem when they're fidgeting, you could be suffering from?
Misokinesia.
Mm-hmm.
Misokinesia, and it's not to be mistaken as misophonia. Misophonia is the hatred of sound, or what they call sound rage. Misokinesia is the hatred of movement. So if you are one of those people that gets very irritated and frustrated when you see someone shaking their foot, you know how somebody will do that? They'll have their legs crossed and they'll shake their foot, or they might tap their fingers, or they might smack their lips or do something like that. If that aggravates you, then you suffer from misokinesia. And this guy, this professor, figured all this stuff out because his girlfriend went to him one day and said, "Hey, I don't want to pile on here, but you are bugging me because you fidget too much." So he looked into this and he started to try to determine how many people actually in the world are worried about this or it annoys them. And he found that about a third of all people are sensitive to watching people fidget.
Hmm. And how did he do that? Did he call on them?
He fidgeted a lot, and they all said, "Stop it." It was a survey of 4,000 people. So he found that a third of them were sensitive to it. 25% have both the misophonia and misokinesia, which is more when it's the sound thing. It's more like smacking of your lips or chewing with your mouth open, those kinds of mouth noises and things like that.
My son does the thing where his feet are on the ground, but then he's doing the constant thing with one foot so that it's seen. And the amazing thing is sometimes it feels like he can shake the whole room with that. I don't know what that is. Or even the kid that was doing that in grade school because they weren't meditating. They would do the thing where they just have the one leg going.
Right,
and you're
exactly.
You're sitting there and you realize, I think he's moving my desk. It's like, how can one person shaking with one leg have that kind of effect? But yeah, that kind of bugs you. You try not to look at it. With my son the other day, or about a year ago, I said to him, hey, Rye, do you notice that you're doing that? And he's like, no. And I said, well, be aware of the fact that you're doing that. Why is that energy? Where's that energy coming from? Why is that energy kind of making your leg move around? And then he goes, well, now it's happening because you're pointing it out. And I'm like, okay, that's a point problem. But the idea of that that shaky thing at the people visiting, is there any way you're supposed to get over what? Not look at them or move on to something else you could be annoyed by, like the smacking of the lips?
No, I don't think there's any way to fix it. But one of the things that is most upsetting is the unpredictability of it, because you notice it out of the corner of your eye and you're thinking, when's it going to stop? When's it going to stop?
Never.
And you don't know if it's ever going to stop. And they're also saying that you make something called a moral assessment. Like, why are you even doing that? What is that? What is that doing by shaking your foot like that? Why are you doing it? So there's a whole lot going on.
I think the best thing to do is to confront the person with it. I suffer from some condition. I don't even know what it is. But Tom has a tendency, when we'd all work together, to hum. But he wasn't even humming a recognizable song. He would just hum something that was humming. And remember that, Jacob? I'm like, hey, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Tom.
Sean's, I think, hyper aware of it, because Sean has him just on in the background sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in queue, and I'll hear him humming, and it's really annoying.
It's so strange.
No offense to Tom, he's great, but it's annoying to me. So
it's the craziest person thing he does. Right.
I wouldn't mind if it was a song.
Is it like an electrical noise? Like,
notes at random. It's just like if he was, like running his fingers around a piano with no pattern to it at all. But with his voice, this is what it is.
You should record it sometime and just play it.
Sean,
just
please
play
do.
It back when it's not there.
Use it for some new bed music.
Oh, please.
I will do that.
Yes. Make sure you get the rights. We don't want to get sued. All right. Tracy Terry looking at traffic for us.